Most adults appreciate both the reality and difficulty of work because we must now or in the past have had to go to work to pay our bills, put a roof over our heads, feed and clothe ourselves and our children. But despite our complaining about it, work is good for us because it gives us a sense of purpose, productivity, and dignity. However, we seem to live in a time when it seems harder and harder to survive work. Work seems to be more and more difficult. From observation of others, including some of you here, and my own personal experience, it is clear that with a few exceptions, corporations are pushing their employees to work harder and harder all the time. A neighbor once told me that he thought his employer was trying to kill him with too much work and impossible standards. Now, that probably wasn't exactly true, but I'm sure that's how he felt about it. It may felt true to him, and even some of you might be able to say that's the way you feel about your work and where you are bound to serve someone for pay. But in light of that, we want to talk tonight about setting the standard as servants, and we talk about how God deals with our obligation to work. And setting the standard as servants. As Christians, we are to set the standard as servants at work. Now, if you'll notice there, it's 1 Peter 2, verses 18 through 25. We're only going to cover through verse 20 tonight. It was intended to be one long lesson. I decided it was going to be too long of a lesson, so we broke it down. It's going to be one lesson tonight. And then we'll get really into the example of Christ next time. But when we read these verses, I want to read verses 18 through 20 for our study this evening before we dive into the text itself. Verse 18, 1 Peter chapter 2. Servants, be submissive to your masters with all respect, not only to those who are good and gentle, but also to those who are unreasonable. For this finds favor. If, for the sake of conscience toward God, a person bears up under sorrows when suffering unjustly, for what credit is there if when you sin and are harshly treated, you endure it with patience? But if when you do what is right and suffer for it, you patiently endure it, this finds favor with God. And what we're going to see tonight as we look at this lesson, we're going to see that Peter says effectively or essentially the same thing he said about citizens that we talked about last week. Submit, support, and surrender. That's our job as citizens of this earthly kingdom, the nation that we're a part of. It's also our obligation, as we're going to see here in these three verses, and within the work context, within the office or the job site, wherever it is that we may work. We are to submit, we are to support, and we are to surrender. The first thing we will look at is the idea of submitting. What does it mean to submit? Servants are to submit. Verse 18, it just says, servants, be submissive to your masters. And this is a consistent concept all throughout the New Testament. Keep your marker there in 1 Peter, but turn back to a couple of passages in the New Testament. Go back to Ephesians chapter 6. Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 5, Paul says essentially the exact same thing. In Ephesians chapter 6, verse 5, Paul writing to the Ephesian church said this, slaves, be obedient to those who are your masters, according to the flesh, with fear and trembling in the sincerity of your heart as to Christ. So he's saying the same thing. Slaves, be obedient to those who are your masters. Then Paul, writing to the Colossian letter, Colossian church, in a similar letter, says again the same thing in chapter 3. In Colossians chapter 3 and in verse 22, he says this. Slaves, in all things obey those who are your masters on earth. Not with external service as those who merely please men, but with sincerity of heart, fearing the Lord. And so you have this common concept, common idea in the New Testament, whether you're reading what Paul wrote or what Peter wrote, of slaves or servants submitting themselves to their masters, to those who are over them. Now, in Colossians and in Ephesians, in Paul's writings, he uses a little bit different word here when it says submit. In verse 22 of Colossians and in verse 5 of Ephesians 6, it's the idea of hear under. The idea is you're underneath someone's authority and you listen to what they say. You do what you're told to do. Whereas when we get into 1 Peter, it's the idea of rank under. We talked about rank under last week and the idea of the military submission. And we'll talk about that in a moment. But I want us to notice another big difference here in between Paul and Peter in the words that they use. And that is Paul uses the common word for slave. And the idea of slave is someone who actually belongs to someone else. But Peter used a different word. Peter used a word for a household servant, someone who very well may be a free man or woman and who could come or go as desired, could seek other employment if they wanted to leave and go somewhere else if their time of service has reached an end. In other words, effectively, this passage addresses people like you and me who work when we work for another person, when we work for a business or corporation or a locally owned business, whatever it may be. We're their servants. We are someone who has voluntarily agreed to work for them. And he says to us that we are to submit. And it's the idea of, it's the idea of service, not slaves. And it's to submit, it's to rank under authority. So Paul says here under, Peter says rank under, and this idea of recognizing the level of authority. Recognizing the fact that, all right, this is my manager, that's the boss, I rank under them, so whatever the manager tells me to do, I listen to and do what he says. I recognize him or his or her authority over me. Same thing for the boss on up the chain. It's the idea that's used for military authority. When you have people in the military, you recognize that if you're a lieutenant and a captain tells you what to do, the lieutenant salutes, says yes, sir, and goes and does what the captain says. Now, if a lieutenant tries to tell the captain what to do, he kind of gets it reversed, and there's going to be problems because the captain is not ranked under the lieutenant. Same thing, the boss is not ranked under the common everyday laborer employee. And so we submit. It's simply rank under. We get in line with authority. Now, the interesting thing here, back in 1 Peter chapter 2, is that he talks about masters. He uses an interesting word for master. Now, typically what we would refer to our boss is as boss. If we're in a job site or we work for a company and our manager speaks to us, we'll say, typically the reaction is, sure, boss. We call him boss. It's just a recognition of their authority over us. We don't call him master. And we don't use the word that's used here. The word that's used here is despots. Literally in Greek is despotes. It's somebody, and so when we think of somebody who's a despot, we think of somebody who's a dictator who has absolute authority and exercises it cruelly and viciously. But that's not the way the word is actually used in the New Testament. It just means somebody that is in charge, somebody that has authority. And this become to be used by most for in a negative sense today for most of us. But it's the idea of someone who's in charge. So he says, servants, be submissive to your masters with all respect. We'll talk about respect in a moment. But I want you to notice that last phrase at the end of verse 18. But also to those who are unreasonable. Unreasonable is a very, very interesting word. And you medical folks will appreciate this. It's the word for which we get scoliosis. It's the idea of something that is twisted or turned in on itself. And so he's saying here, servants, you're voluntarily submitting to someone's authority, even though they may be despots, even those who are unreasonable or those who are twisted or perverted, those who are turned in on themselves. And it's a good description sometimes of bosses who are twisted and turned in on themselves, and they see their position as a means of exercising authority and showing everybody who is boss and making people jump and doing everything they can to get their way and demonstrate their lack of good judgment, but their power over others. Many of you, I am sure, have had to deal with bosses that were like that. I'll tell you a story. I had a boss. Well, let me back up. I had a boss that was just really a good boss. We got along quite well. And then there was another guy who was a manager in the office who wasn't my direct manager, but I was a supervisor and he was a manager, which put him a level up on the chain. And then one day we had a meeting in the office and they pointed out, at the end they said, well, we're going to have a group meeting, an office meeting on such and such date. And when I heard the date, I said, oh, sorry, I'm not going to be able to be here. And the guy that was not my manager, but he was a manager, so a level above me, stepped in front of me as I'm walking out the office, out of the conference room door, and said, you will be there. And I had turned to pick something up. And as I turned to tell him what he could do with his barking order at me, which it would have been polite, but I would have told him, you don't have the right to tell me that. You're not my boss. My boss stepped in front of me, put up his hand, and said, I'll deal with this. Because he saw that this was not going to go well. Because this guy was going, and I'm not saying that, I would not have cussed him. I would not have yelled at him. I would have just have refused, said, you don't have that authority over me. And we're going to talk a little bit about the realm of authority over, because my plans took precedence. I did not have an obligation to be there on that day because that was within my right to not be there. In fact, when we work for bosses, we are obligated to submit to them within reason. And think about it from this standpoint. They don't own us. So when you work for a company, when you submit to a boss, you are voluntarily submitting to them in agreement with them that they're going to recompense you, they're going to pay you for your time and productivity. So they own your time within reasonable, within what's agreed to, and they own your productivity. They don't own you. So if whatever they're wanting you to do is outside of your obligated time or outside of your obligated duties, you don't have to do what they tell you to do. But we have to understand that they own our... But when we're at work and we have committed to work, we have to be there and be ready to do the work they would have us to do. We agree to work for someone in exchange for a paycheck. And what we're doing is we're promising to give them both our time and best effort in exchange for money. That's what we're giving them, and they're giving us money in exchange for that and other benefits. Now, if they have us sit around, this is one of the things that's always frustrating for me. Every job I've ever had was one where you were just getting it from the day, from the time you got onto the job site until you left. You were busy doing something. You just didn't sit around, and I never could figure out how people could have a job where they sat around and just didn't do anything for a lot of the time. But even if you're in a job where you sit around for a long time and do nothing because you're expected to be ready to get up and act and do whatever it is that they need you to do, then you have to sit there and be ready to do the work. You have to set yourself up to do this. They still owe us for the time, and we owe them the obligation to be available for them during that time. And even if our conscience may bother us. And if our conscience is bothering us, we should think about, well, are there ways I could be productive even while I'm doing nothing? Even though the boss has me sitting here doing nothing, are there ways that I can be of benefit and profit to the company, to my employer? As Christians, we have the obligation to think along those terms. How can I do that? Even if we see our time and their money is being wasted, we need to find a way to help, to go beyond, but don't assume that we have to be active or that we need to step outside of our lane into things that we're not authorized to do or haven't been trained to do just because we think they're wasting our time and their money. This is just some kind of practical things about work. Our time and our productivity is theirs, so we have to be ready to step up and be productive when called upon, and then do so safely and in compliance with legal duties. And here's another side of this. We must never forget that any call to action, call to work, anytime our boss tells us we need to do this or that, if it requires us to disobey God, we must say no. That is always the case. That is an unbendable, unexchangeable, uncorruptible rule. If our boss tells us to do something that would make us violate God's will, we have to say, no, I will not do that. I cannot do that. If a twisted boss tells us to do something that is harmful or illegal, we must refuse to comply, because that comes within that realm of doing what God would tell us not to do. But think carefully about this. This can be very tricky, and we need to approach it with great caution. We need to be very careful about this. If you're going to tell a boss, I can't do that, you better be ready to show why and say why. Got some military folk here. According to the Military Code of Conduct, I did just very little bit of research on that. Military Code of Justice, soldiers have the duty and obligation to obey legal orders and to disobey illegal orders. Both sides of it. It is their duty. If they're told to do something that is legal and proper, they're supposed to do it. But if they're told to do something that is illegal and improper and against the Constitution, they're supposed to say, no, I can't do that. That is an illegal order. That is an unacceptable order. Knowing the difference, maybe I should talk to Sean about this a little bit, but knowing the difference can be very tricky and requires a great deal of understanding, not only of what we're supposed to do and what we're not supposed to do, but also that whatever we choose to do comes with risk. Obeying an illegal order can get the soldier in trouble, can it? You can nod your head, okay? Nodding your head, get your soldier in trouble. I was just following orders does not justify or excuse doing wrong. Nor does, well, I think I might have been breaking the law, justify refusing to obey a legal order. We have to be able to validate or verify our reason for why we don't do something. Now, in the same way, in everyday work outside of the military, breaking the law could get us in legal trouble, even if we just did what the boss said. This is why we must not obey the boss when it causes us to disobey God. And when the boss tells us to break the law to benefit his company, to benefit whatever, we have to say no. Because we could get in legal trouble. But we also have a higher authority, and that is God. We must not violate the will of God and do what God tells us not to do, or not do what God tells us to do. So on the other side of that coin, refusing to do what we're told to do at work can get us in a lot of trouble, especially if we cannot justify our refusal morally or legally. So the boss comes along and tells us, all right, do X. And we say, I can't do X. Why? Well, it's immoral. Well, how? We better be able to show how. Or it's illegal, which would make it immoral. How is it illegal? Now, if we can't justify that, we could get docked pay, we could get demoted, or perhaps even fired. If it is morally or legally wrong, we must refuse to go along no matter the earthly consequences. This is the key right there. Even if we get fired, even if we lose money, whatever it is, if the company or the boss is telling us to do what God said do not do, we answer to God first. And this is where, again, it gets a little bit tricky. There's some nuance there. Romans chapter 14, when it talks about not violating your conscience. The boss may tell one person, two people to do something. Both of them are Christians. One of them may say, no, it violates my conscience. The other one may say, yes, it doesn't violate my conscience. And the person who thinks it's wrong to do this could be wrong. And the person who thinks it's okay to do that could be right. But if the person who thinks it's okay is right, should they try to force the person who thinks it's wrong to do it anyway? You can either nod your head or shake your head. What do you think the answer to that is? The answer is no. Because we cannot force a brother or sister in Christ to violate their conscience. Even if they're misunderstanding it, we don't want them to violate their conscience because their conscience is between them and God. And if they want to be right with God, God tells them, don't violate your conscience. And he tells the brother, the strong brother or sister, don't try to make someone violate their conscience. You see, it's not always black and white, is it? It's not as always as easy or simple as we might think it may be. So that's why you start with the basic principle. You submit to the authority of the employee, of the person you work for, except when they violate the will of God. Now, always put God first. But then notice the next thing going back to 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 18, is our attitude and our approach. If I had turned around and looked that guy in the face and yelled at him and told him to mind in those business or to shut up or something ugly to him, if I had been ugly and disrespectful to him, that would have been inappropriate. And I wasn't going to be. I was just going to be firm. Thankfully, my boss stepped in and handled it anyway. But notice what Peter says about those situations and dealing with these bosses. Going back to verse 18. Servants, be submissive to your masters. And there's that little clause there, with all respect. This is another way of saying support. With all respect. And it doesn't matter whether you like the boss or not, or whether they're twisted or perverted. If it's something that you have to do, then do it with respect. If it's something that you simply cannot do because it'll violate your conscience or do something illegal that's just wrong and you can't do it, you still refuse with respect. You treat your boss, your master, your supervisor, your director, whoever it is, with dignity and respect. No matter how much we may want to lash out, we must not speak evil to and of our bosses. And that means don't be the office complainer. Any of you here ever worked in an office where you had somebody that every time you're around them, they're griping about something about work? I've been around people like that. Just everything. Just griping and complaining and running the boss down, running the company down. Just everything every word that comes out of their mouth, unless the boss is around, is something negative. Don't be that person. Now, here's another important point. Not only are we not to be that person at work, don't be that person at home either. Because guess who's watching and listening? If we come home, honey, that boss, dumbest person I've ever met in my life. Guess what we're teaching our children? Little pitchers have big ears and they hear it. So don't be that person at home either, because we don't want to train our children to be like that as well, because they will become what they see and hear us do, say, and do. Well, the third thing is servants surrender. And the attitude behind this, and we'll get into it in much more detail as Christ is our example in verses 21 through 25 next time, but we do this because we're surrendered to God. We accept even the abuse, even the mistreatment, even the ugliness of our bosses. They may be the nastiest mouth person that we've ever been around. And eventually, if necessary, we may need to find employment somewhere else to get away from them. But while we're working there, we have to treat them with respect because we are following the example of Jesus Christ. Verse 19 explains how this works. For this finds favor if for the sake of conscience toward God, a person bears up under sorrows when suffering unjustly. So if you're doing what's right and you're under a nasty boss but you're doing what's right because your conscience is submitted to God, surrendered to God, then that finds favor. Maybe not with the boss, but with the boss, with God Himself. And then in verse 20, he says, now if you do something you shouldn't do, you're going to get punished, then that's expected. Verse 20, for what credit is there if when you sin and are harshly treated, you endure it with patience? So if you do something you shouldn't do at work and you're getting trouble, don't boast about, well, I took that last tongue lashing from my boss. Well, you deserved it because of whatever it is that you did wrong or we did wrong. But if when you do what is right and suffer for it, you patiently endure it, this finds favor with God. Who are we surrendered to? Who are we serving? We are serving God. The working world is filled with people who speak evil of their bosses and coworkers. We must not join them. We must not be a part of that. And that's because the standard is set by none other than Jesus Christ. And we'll talk about that next week. For now, let's wrap up with some takeaways. Just a couple of takeaways. First one is take your best to work every day and bring it home too. In other words, when you go to work, take the best you that you can. Be the best person that you can be. That doesn't mean you're going to be the best employee they have. There may be others that are better than you, but be the best employee that you can be with the best attitude that you can bring so that your employer and your coworkers see the right kind of example. And when I say bring it home to, that means don't be all smiley at the office, Mr. Happy, Mrs. Happy, and then come home and be Mr. Grinch, Mr. Grumpy Pants, who just complains and everything in front of you. Be the best person you can be at home and at work. The second thing is take the verbal abuse even when it's undeserved. And this is hard. I think this is hard for us because we live in a society where we're told that we don't have to put up with that. My boss is not nice to me. I don't have to put up with that. Yes, we do. Yes, we do. And we'll get into the example of why that's the case next time. Then the last one is take the risk and do the right thing no matter the cost. Because sometimes we could get it wrong. We could say, you know what, that's illegal, I can't do that. And turn out this is perfectly legal, we misunderstood. Or for whatever reason, we decide we're not going to do something because we just don't think we should, and we make the wrong decision. But if our conscience, remember what I said earlier about Romans 14, if our conscience is telling us, don't do this, accept the risk and refuse to do it. Be ready to be educated, receive more information, and then change your mind if that's necessary, but do not violate your conscience just to make the boss happy, just because of pressure from work. Oh, that we had lots and lots and lots of employees in our country that were like this. We wouldn't have one-tenth of the mess that we have in our politics and in our communities and in our companies if people would do what's right and listen to their conscience and take the risk and accept the cost, whatever it might be. Well, that's our lesson tonight, 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 18 through 20. Set the standard as servants. Set the standard as servants. So let's end with this. Even if you're the best worker in the world, you know it brings no eternal benefit if you're not a worker for the Lord. You could be the best employee in all of Litchfield. You could win an award for best employee in all of Litchfield. And if you're not a Christian, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Because eternal reward, eternal fellowship with God is what's important to us. The Bible calls for people to be builders, planters, waterers, and harvesters in the kingdom and in the field that belongs to God and in the house that belongs to God. And those are just a few of the descriptions of the believer's work for the Lord. God calls for people who will work for Him. So we ask the question, are you a worker for the Lord? If you're not, you need to become one. And if there's any way we can help you tonight, become a worker who serves the Lord, brings glory to God, sets the standard as a servant in the world around you because you're a servant of Jesus Christ. If we can help you be that tonight, please come while we stand and sing.